This episode is presented by LMT and Forever Cheese.
This week, it's the season finale of Meat and Three. We're following up our episode about youth with a look at age and how aging affects life on farms and in kitchens.
At the most basic level, we need people to grow food for a growing global population.
The question of planning for retirement or old age as a cook, it's almost one that doesn't exist bizarrely until it's too late.
We also have a story about a food that might be older than you think.
A recent archaeological finding might have CrossFitters everywhere reevaluating their diets.
Plus, a story about one of Atlanta's most historic and risque landmarks.
There are dancers that have been there 20 and 30 years.
Don't miss our season finale of Meat and Three, available wherever you get your podcasts.
We talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse. Snacky tunes.
Ever since I let you go, I've been real lonely.
Turning up, turning up, turning up, turning up. Hello and welcome to Snacky Tunes. I'm here with Chef Jason Roney, chef partner of the Rose in Venice. Jason, welcome to Snacky Tunes.
Thank you for having me.
If you can hear the fans going on in the background, it's because we are in the one heat wave of the year in Los Angeles. Which is ironic because I thought when I moved out here, part of the deal was that Venice would never get above 74 degrees.
Yes.
That was part of the deal. When you moved from New York to LA in Venice, you just thought you never see 80.
It was 110 on the line Saturday night.
I mean, that's bonkers. That's bonkers. So before we get to the legendary Rose Cafe,
okay,
I want to go back to the beginning. And I want to talk about where you grew up in the OC. And actually, before we talk about food, I want to talk about music. Because I know you're a huge music fan, and the OC is a legendary music place. So when you were growing up, what was it like growing up there, going to shows, hit the punk scene, all that?
So, yeah, I mean, I listened to a large array of music growing up. I was probably the only kid in my Catholic school who watched OMTV Raps religiously.
Sure.
It was 3:30 every day, Monday through Friday, with Ed Lover and Dr. Dre.
You're like, I have communion right now. I'm sorry, sister.
Because there was always, a Headbangers Ball. There was OMTV Raps, and then there was Headbangers Ball right afterwards.
I would say it played on Sunday nights or recorded for 120 minutes. That was sort of my church.
Absolutely.
So you grew up there, and then that was sort of your introduction. People forget that MTV really was awesome and a really great way to learn about music.
Absolutely. I mean, it was always on in the background.
Oh, yeah. It was always on.
So.
Until my parents got home, and then I was like, I wasn't watching TV. So you loved music early on. What drew you to music?
I don't know. I think because my mom was always driving around with, you know, I remember a song of Driving Through the Desert with a Horse with No Name was like a song that was always on in the background. And whether it was that or Michael Jackson to Diana Ross to Whitney Houston, my mom was always like rocking out. We had record players, we had records. She was cleaning. There was music on in any sort of way.
Yeah, my house was also always full of music. There was always music on. It's always weird when you go to a house and it's quiet.
Absolutely.
So you grew up in Orange County, and when I was digging into it, if you could have paid me to say what was your very first food job, there's no way I would have guessed Club 33. And for those who are unfamiliar with Club 33, as I was actually until I moved out here, what is Club 33?
Club 33 is a, for lack of a better, private club inside of Disneyland that I believe is $25,000 membership fee.
I think so. And a waiting list.
Wait, it's like a 5-year waiting list.
It's the only place you can drink
inside of Disneyland California Adventure is a different story, but Disneyland proper, you can drink in there. And they actually have like an extensive wine list and cocktails, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, you know, when I've been a couple times, and I was surprised. It's one of those places where it's way better than it has to be.
Oh, yeah. It's beautiful. It's like this ornate, like New Orleans kind of style, you know, regal restaurant. It's pretty incredible.
Now, how did you get involved at Club 33?
Well, so when I was 16, I went to Disneyland, and as any kid in Southern California is like, I want to work at Disneyland. I'm like, what do you want to do? I want to operate the Matterhorn.
Sure,
So I showed up, you know, and I was like, yeah, I want to work here, and I want to be a ride operator. They were like, no.
So no.
You're going to, we'll call you. And they called me, I think, like 6 months later. And my mom had worked in restaurants. She was a bartender.
Okay.
And they're like, oh, we have a busboy job for you at the Blue Bayou.
Oh, yeah.
Which is that restaurant at the Pirates of the Caribbean that you go by. They serve the Monte Cristo sandwiches and prime ribs.
And also, not that bad.
Not that bad. Impossible to get into as well.
Impossible to get into. Easier to get into the Club 33.
Yes. Pro tip would be to make a reservation before you go.
Yes. And you can do pro tip reservation and fireworks reserve seating.
Correct.
Yes. Anyway, I digress.
So that being said, I was like, I went to my mom, I'm like, yeah, they want me to be a busboy. She's like, oh, you can make tips, it'll be cool, you should go do it. So I show up that day, there was no busboy job. They actually stuck me into a kitchen downstairs, which is below New Orleans Square, called the New Orleans Main Kitchen. And it's this massive, massive production area for, I think, like 7 outlets of restaurants.
Yeah.
French Market, Cafe Orleans, Veranda, Mint Julep Bar, what's it called? Blue Bayou, Club 33.
It's amazing how they haven't updated. Because what year is this?
This is 1994.
Okay. They haven't updated it much.
No. But we actually used to make everything.
Really?
So when I came in, you know, I was like, oh, they're like, yeah, we're going to put you downstairs. And I was like, okay, great. And we were making, when I say garbage pails, I mean huge garbage containers full of ranch dressing, Italian dressing. We were assembling Monte Cristo sandwiches for Blue Bayou. We were making vats full of clam chowder 7 times a day.
Secret is that the water in the Caribbean ride is actually clam chowder.
They make enough of it.
They make enough of it. So what was, and what did you learn? Like, what did you take away from there? Is there any lessons from that first big job of working there and then working Club 33 that's still with you today? Especially, well, I mean, volume.
Volume, for sure. I mean, honestly, I mean, funny enough, Disneyland prepared me enough a little bit with the wherewithal to run, I think, a restaurant of this caliber and this size.
Of Rose Cafe.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean,
we serve almost 10,000 people a week here.
I mean, that's insane. Those numbers are crazy.
So, you know, like Disneyland, the coolest thing about Disney was, like, I would get to work. I had to be there at 7. So I'd be walking across the park at 6:30.
Yeah.
And it's amazing that you'd see them. They would put the whole place Humpty Dumpty back together again every day.
Yeah.
The guys with the paintbrushes were painting the things. And, you know, it reset itself every day. And for lack of a better, we kind of have to do the same thing here.
I mean, it's a good, you know, when you're dealing with something like that, I mean, Disneyland is so impressive. And then when you get to peek behind, you know, Snow White's dress a little bit, it's even more impressive.
It's pretty impressive. It's pretty incredible.
And so after Club 33, you went to another legendary place. Went to Chez Panisse.
Yes.
Which, by the way, that 1-2 combination, it's like hang up the apron, because that's just the start of your career. But how did you hit Chez Panisse right after Club 33?
So I drove. So when I was working at Club, it was like my first introduction to like food, and I like.
And this is early 90s, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
And I wanted to be. I was like a graffiti artist in like high school. And
sure.
I wanted to go to the Oakland School of Visual Arts, and but I had no money. So somebody gave me a gourmet magazine. There was a restaurant called Post Trio, which was Wolfgang Puck's outpost in San Francisco, which was kind of like the Spago of of there. And they had these two chefs that were running called Mitchell and Steven Rosenthal. They have a number of restaurants now up there as well. So I showed up there and I was like, oh, you know, their food was really interesting. It was like roasted duck with pineapple sauce and bao buns. And I was like, what the hell is this food?
Yeah, sure.
So I got a job there first, and I had been reading about Shea. And like one day I just took the train across
to Berkeley.
And I was just like, hey, I just, you know, do you guys need help? And they're like, what do you mean, do we need help? They weren't hiring. And I was like, well, I'll work for free. So
were stages not, were they not doing like stages? Because, you know,
anybody would have taken, anybody took free labor back then.
Yeah. Free labor is not a new thing.
Just kidding.
But so, and what was it like there? I mean, you know, you go from essentially this, even though you're making everything house in Disney at Club 33, it's this very like, you know, I don't want to say Cisco, but, you know, it's a very like big.
Oh, yeah, it's totally Cisco.
Okay, fine, Cisco. But then you go to, like, the exact opposite, where they're
literally prepared.
Networks.
I wasn't prepared.
No?
No.
What was the one thing you weren't prepared for?
Well, like, they were like, oh, one of the chefs was like, go grab me celery root. And I was like, okay, I'll go get some. So I literally cut the bottoms off all the celery in the walk-in.
Beautiful.
And brought back all the bottoms of the restaurant. He goes, are you fucking kidding me right now?
Wow.
He's like, do you not know what celery root is? I was like, I guess I don't.
I guess I'm about to learn. But you learn. I mean, that. So I would say that like 1-2 combination of knowing how to run a giant operation, but then actually really getting to meet farmers and understand what the land is all about.
I mean, I'd never seen any of this. So I grew up in Orange County where like there was a farm behind my house. Right.
Right.
We never used it.
Right.
Vegetables came out of a can. And usually put cheese on top of it.
And also, this is the mid-90s. It's a different... Now it's like...
Oh, it's...
It's completely different.
Yes.
And so after... You spent a little bit more time in California, but then the siren of New York and Europe call. So, you know, obviously born and raised in California, that East Coast thing, especially probably as a music fan, starts calling to you. So what brought you out there?
There was a Wine Spectator that chronicled every neighborhood in New York City. And all of their restaurants.
Mm.
And I was like reading about this food, and I was just like, what? Like, one dish specifically was at Le Cirque, and it was a papillote of bass with layered with black truffles over a Barolo sauce or creamed cabbage. I was like, what the hell is that?
What is I know those are words, and I know that's about food, but I don't understand.
I didn't know what it was. I didn't understand what they were talking about. I mean, like, you read about this guy, Greg Kuntz at Las Panas, who was doing these, like, Southeast Asia flavors with French food, and the things that they were talking about, these articles, I was just like, okay, well, I don't understand this, and I have to go find out what that means.
Yeah. And so, going to New York, going to London, what was the difference of cooking in California? We'll use Chez Panisse and like your time at Spago as a reference point. What was the difference?
The pace.
Yeah?
Yeah, you have to move.
Move.
You really, I mean, there's a reason there's a New York Minute. New York will chew you up and spit you out.
Big time.
You're either doing it, if not, somebody will do it for you.
You gotta get that timing right of when to leave right before New York is like, I'm done with you.
Yes.
But so you're there, and where are you cooking, and what are you listening to?
Oh, man. The thing about New York was there were so much opportunities to listen to music. I think for me, it really kind of took off was when I got my first real chef job.
Which was?
At the Tasting Room.
Okay.
On the East Village on First and First. It was a 23-seat restaurant.
Oh, yeah.
Where we changed the menu every single day.
Sure.
We were closed 2 days a week.
No pressure.
I used to fill up my backpack with vegetables at the farmer's market. We would go to...
Now that you know what celery root is.
Now we know what celery root is. We would go to Chinatown and pick up, like, octopus and squid or whatever else. And I would buy from all the Polish butchers over on First Avenue all their bacon and sausages. So we'd make all these menus up there. Yeah. Long story short, it's across the street from Mercury Lounge.
Oh, yeah.
So,
like, in late 90s, that was the place.
That was the place. And it was like, you know, you were also around the corner from Sidewalk Cafe.
Uh-huh.
So here we are. I would get off work. I walk across the street, go watch the Strokes play.
Yep.
Interpol. Was the Dodsons to Moldy Peaches. I mean, you name it. And then, like, we'd all end up at Three of Cups on Second Avenue, on First Avenue. Oh, my God, drinking, you know, Pabst and, like, shots of whatever. The next thing you know, like, Junior Casablancas is sitting right here, and Albert Hammond's to your right.
Yeah.
That was, like, one of the coolest times.
That was, I would say that was New York's, I don't want to say last coolest moment, but definitely when, like, New York was at the center of the part of the music universe.
Oh, absolutely.
And to be part of that and to cook food, where those guys come in and eat?
Yeah, absolutely. Albert specifically used to come in a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, I think from his father, he probably had a little bit of taste.
A little bit of taste. Wilson, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to play a song for the archives. And when we come back, we're going to talk about opening up your first place, hear a little bit more about music in New York, and then what eventually brought you back to the West Coast, here on Snacky Tunes on heritageradionetwork.org.
Thank you. awesome.
See from the eye.
When you think to yourself,
look at me, don't look at them.
Do you think of
Gone
yourself?
Deeper inside.
When you think to yourself,
the think of pontificate.
Do you think
it
of yourself?
This is purple, this grandeur.
When you think to yourself,
examples are suffering.
Do you think of yourself?
Always simply,
do you
gotcha.
Think of yourself? When you think to yourself,
do you think of yourself?
Do you think of
when
yourself?
Hello and welcome back to Snacky Tunes. I'm here with Chef Jason Neroni at The Rose in Venice, trying to beat the heat with two fans, one AC unit.
That kind of works.
It kind of works. I mean, this sort of heat reminds me of part of like the New York summers, of where you're just like, I can't get cool.
It is as close to a New York summer right now as you could get.
Yeah. So you're in New York. You already have one hell of a resume. From Chez Panisse, from Club 33. You spent some time at Le Cirque.
Le Cirque, Blue Hill.
Blue Hill.
11 Madison Park, Tabla.
Yeah. So the
just
resume.
Just
a couple places. What drove you to open up your first place? Especially in a city as tough as New York.
Well, I didn't really think I'd ever leave.
Right.
And why not?
Sure.
You know, it was.
How
great.
Old were you? What year was this?
27, 28.
Okay. Also, the follies of youth sort of go into opening up a restaurant in New York.
Because you think you can do it?
Yeah, sure. Because fuck you. You're going to do it? I'm going to do it.
And I, to this day, I am a very different person from when I was that age to now. Like, even a different chef altogether.
Oh, my God. If you're still the same person who you are from 27 to 5 years, 10 years later...
You got problems.
You got problems. So what was the first place? Where did you open it? What were you doing?
First place I opened was 10 Downing.
Okay.
On Downing Street, 6th Avenue, in the West Village.
Solid location.
Great location. Quarter, right there. Bleecker Street meets right there. I mean,
the crazy roads of West Village.
Amazing.
But they all led to one spot. Were you pulling from all of your past experiences, or was it something new? What were you going for with the
first? At first, I was very reserved. Because like at 71, where I was the chef, I took over for Wiley. I was, you know, we called it like. The press called it high wire act cooking. Like we were pushing the envelope, you know, like as hard as we could, like really just look what I can do.
Yeah.
And I think with 10 Downing, it was the height of the crash. It was 2008.
Yeah.
And we were like, you know, it was a return to simplicity. It was like, look at now we were like butchering whole animals, making sausages, tureens.
I mean, if they could not write enough about hamburgers that year, 2008.
We had a burger on the menu.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the year, like, what's it called? But McNally's place that was serving the burger.
The corner? No. Oh, the, I'm blanking on it.
But it was, like, the...
The 26th, the Black Label
the
Burger.
The year of the...
Minetta Tavern.
There we go. Great restaurant.
And that was the year when they were, like, that started... It was like, oh, we're going to put a $26 Black Label Burger on there. Yeah.
Ooh. And that was...
By the way.
Great burger.
So you opened the place. It's 2008, and you were like, it was sort of like, you know that I can do all this, but here's the restraint.
Yeah, I mean, I pulled no, like, I had a passion and flair for Asian techniques, like dashis and ponzus, and but didn't touch those there. It was like more of like a, I want to call it like French aesthetic.
Sure. We
were really pushing. There was a braised short rib with a, you know, poached bone marrow on top. We got really famous because I really wanted to emulate the Judy Rogers whole roasted chicken salad.
Ooh.
So that was one thing that we were selling so much chicken there. It was insane. And it was just at that time.
It was a good time, and I feel in many ways that even though the economy's strong, it sort of swung back to a little bit of that, of what 2008 was doing.
I still sell a lot of chicken there.
Yeah. So when opening the restaurant, and music being a big part of your life and all that, what was the opening soundtrack? How'd you put it together?
That was a lot of fighting involved on that one.
Really?
Yeah, because the owners had a different idea of what they thought it was going to be.
What was your idea?
For me, there was a huge art presence in there.
Sure.
Alex Katz to Damien Hirst. We had, like, very serious paintings on the wall. So, you know, you at the time, I don't think my prowess with music was as great as it is now.
Mm-hmm.
But it definitely has grown. But then it was more like, you know, I couldn't get that East Village mindset out of my way.
Dude, that rock scene. But that rock scene was everything then. I mean, I was living in New York at the time, and that was the world.
I know then, I think it was, like, even then, I don't want to call it Pat. It was risky to play hip-hop in restaurants at that point.
I know. And now it's like, how am I a hip LA restaurant? I do French fine dining and put rap on the overhead. There we go.
So there was a lot of, what's the word I'm looking for? There was a lot of, like, David Bowie. There was a lot of LCD sound system. Still to this day here, but...
I mean, I have no problem with any of that.
Neither do I.
None of that. And so, how long... What's the run of the restaurant? How long are you there for? What did you feel that you did there when you felt it was time to sort of come back to California?
I was there for 2 years, and my son was born. You know, and...
idea of raising a kid in New York?
3 months into it, in a sweltering heat... As such, I was kind of like, you know, it's time to go.
So you're just like, we're done. You and the wife and the son.
I had avidly been looking to try to get into Los Angeles to come back, but when I left here in the first place, I was like, I'm gonna go for a year and then that's it. 15 years later,
right?
Well, I guess it's time to go back.
And then when you came back, you opened up a few. You did some consulting, but then you wound up opening up your own restaurant, right?
I ended up in San Diego for a little bit, which was really amazing, at this restaurant called Blanca.
Oh, yeah.
And we got four-star reviews and all the Tribunes. But again, it was still what I was doing there. They were not ready for it in San Diego at the time. We were doing, like, bone marrow stuffed ribeyes to foie gras mousses, et cetera, et cetera. And we had a bar menu that did really well, and we had a fine dining room restaurant that did not.
Yeah.
So I was there for about 6 months, and it wasn't great for business. And eventually, as things do happen in business, we moved on.
Yeah.
And I floated for a little while. I consulted a lot. I was in Aspen. I was in Toronto. I was in Portland.
Can I ask
about
the consulting part of every chef who's successful, their long-term relationship of a profession? Because I feel like every chef who's owned a restaurant and then sort of goes in this weird consulting, like Paula Brandt has done that, like all the guys, the big guys have done it, things like that. What is that moment like where you're like, I'm going to consult? What's going through your head?
Sometimes you need a gig.
Yeah.
I mean, I still consult from time to time for certain people. Just don't broadcast it.
Yeah.
Sometimes people just need, like, advice and direction in certain ways.
Yeah.
I mean... I know some chefs that have made a career out of being consultants.
Exactly. I guess that's sort of what I'm getting at. People who are just like, they had a restaurant, they no longer have a place, and they're just consulting for forever.
I don't know how people can do that on a regular. It seems like it would be a little difficult.
Because
in fact, you're selling yourself.
Right.
You're trying to always get the next gig. And it's like, how much can you really, can you lend yourself to this project?
Right. And how long does your name... Because when you leave a restaurant, you're like, now I'm consulting for them, you still have cachet. But once you get out of the game for long enough and you're not like, I don't have my restaurant anymore, it's like, at what point do you lose that cachet unless you become part of like a restaurant business or, you know, like a restaurant management group?
Correct. I don't know. I don't know how you do that. You either start your own business, this is the restaurant business. Like, you're only as good as your last plate.
Sure. Yeah.
If you're not, for lack of a better, on the trend, or if you're not... consistently putting out a product that people appreciate. I don't know how you stay relevant.
Especially when your name, sometimes, especially when you're consulting, is nowhere on the menu, nowhere on the project.
It works like if you have your own business and you're side consulting, but then you have to be very careful what you're lending yourself to.
Yeah, especially if you start putting your name on, like...
I mean, there's people who will come to you, I mean, people still come to me, and they're like, oh, we want you to do da-da-da-da, and I'm like,
maybe white label. My name will never get out. So coming back to L.A.,
yes.
When did you feel ready to open up your next place, and what was that place?
So I just had an idea. I got really good at making pasta. And I basically sold an idea to a former partner of mine to do Superba Snack Bar.
Which was an amazing spot.
Yeah, it was this cool, like, lack of a better kind of sushi counter with, like, an extended restaurant, which was honestly the day that we finished, and it was a little scary because I was like, oh my God, I'm on display here.
Oh yeah, there's no hiding.
There was no hiding.
You've picked a dish you can't really hide behind because there's no hiding behind pasta, and you're out in the open.
Yeah, it was very strange. But it was awesome. We knocked it out of the park. It was, I really just had this concept that I wanted people to be able to eat every day, for lack of a better.
Yeah.
I always look at things a little differently. I wanted to give, like, you know, the classic carbonara a little twist. Let's smoke it. Let's, you know, put a 62-degree egg poached on top of it. You know, let's turn it on its head a little bit.
But this was, like, 2010, 2011?
Yeah, we opened, 11. We opened, like, literally, I think, 7 years ago this week.
Yeah, and so that was very much of the ilk when, like, it was, like, we've swung past the recession, but we still want comfort, but we're now open to, like, sort of pillaging the best of the, like, avant-garde techniques. Yeah. Sous vide egg and things like that, and the smoking and all that type of stuff.
Yeah, we were doing a lot of fun stuff. We were doing, like, lavender braised lamb bellies over there, and fried chicken was, like, on a roll at that time.
Fried chicken was huge at that time.
And we were doing this really awesome fried chicken dish. I mean, it was still comforting, but it was still filling. And I don't think there was anything on the menu over $20.
And that's great, especially for this part of town. And what was the soundtrack? Did you have control of the soundtrack?
For the most part.
Were you bringing any West Coast vibes, New York vibes?
Again, I still was not overly comfortable playing hip-hop there yet.
Okay.
Except for maybe, I think, like a 2 Chainz song once in a while.
Sure.
Which is, like, going to be more extreme for hip-hop.
I was not expecting to. I think it was like, oh, I had, like, most deaf song that...
I had music on the menu there, but I wasn't as creative, I think, as I've become with music. But there was always a Wilco. There was a La Ray Montaigne. What's his name? And there's always a Strokes in there.
Of course.
And
that's a security blanket.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, last night. I mean, you can't never not hear that again.
I know. So you're at Superba. How does that wind down there, and how do you wind up here at Rose Cafe?
Superba. We did Superba Food and Bread.
Yep.
We did this place called Eastboro, which was like this Vietnamese concept down in Culver City. I got approached to do the Rose, and I said no. And then I said no again.
Mm-hmm.
And then I thought, oh, maybe.
Okay.
It was a little close to home,
yeah.
Honestly, at the time. Like, really close to home.
Like, physically or emotionally?
Physically.
Okay.
You know, because it's like 3 blocks up the street.
Right.
But unfortunately, as business goes, people separate.
Yep.
And I saw a really great opportunity with this. Living in Venice. This is a Venice institution.
I mean, let's paint a picture. For those who have never heard of Rose Cafe, what is its importance to the neighborhood?
I think it's kind of like one of those cornerstones. It was always that meeting place for a lot of people.
Yeah.
It's been here since 1979.
Yep.
I believe there's been a lot of people to walk through these walls.
A lot of people.
You would have said Rose Cafe to anybody. It was always that spot that people met.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I actually had meetings here before when I was down the street, just because it was a place you could just go to. It was centralized.
Yeah.
But I don't think it had ever yet met its full potential that I think that it's at now.
I mean, so you come in 2015.
2014?
Reopened in 2015.
Yeah, it was 14 when I got brought in, so 15 we close it the day after Valentine's Day, and then open up that November, so yes.
So, when you are at the helm of an institution, mm-hmm. and you're the new guy, and there's people who've been coming here for 2 decades, and they know the Rose Cafe. You don't know the Rose Cafe. Like, I don't. How do you keep it so that you don't upset the people who have been here for forever, but bring it into a modern era, both menu-wise and music-wise?
Yeah, it's very difficult.
Yeah?
Would
you care to expand on that?
There was a lot of backlash.
Right.
I mean, there was one protester one day when we opened.
Really?
There was one.
Signing everything?
I believe so.
Okay. But how do you approach it? Because, I mean, you obviously have your ideas. You obviously know where a restaurant like this, because, you know, this restaurant could just be only having old regulars and not ever attracting anyone new.
So I slipped in before they closed.
Right.
And started dropping in a couple new menu items before
sure.
they closed, just to test out the waters a little
like
bit.
Like DJing, just like little, just teasing little beats of upcoming songs, right?
Yes. And eventually when we closed, and I brought some of those things back, one of them was the crispy Brussels sprouts with kale pesto and 2 fried eggs. It's like one of our classic standard dishes.
Doesn't get better than that.
And we saw a lot of them. And, you know, we opened with breakfast and lunch first,
yeah.
which is what they were known for. And we didn't even touch dinner first because, excuse me, I think we wanted to welcome them back into the community. You know, we wanted
sure.
to be welcomed back. And you know, we activated this entire restaurant in phases, which was another very difficult part.
Yeah. So. And how was the response?
I think good. Yeah. I mean, February 16, 2018, we served over 1 million people.
I mean, that's crazy. That's so crazy.
So.
And let's talk about the music, because you are now doing seasonal playlists.
Yes.
Feeling comfortable about putting hip-hop on the...
Absolutely.
Okay. What was the... Do you remember the first hip-hop song you put on here? Or one of?
It was probably, like, Jay-Z, Hard Knock Life or something.
Sure. Classic.
Gotta put on a banger. Like, you know, I like to put on anthem-y songs for people because it puts them in good moods. They understand them. They want to sing to them. People feel that comfortability. They relax a little bit more.
Now, I know that you do seasonal playlists. How do the seasons affect the different playlists that you're going to do?
It could be... It just, like, you know, like right now, what are we putting on right now? I couldn't even the actual list.
You have Tainted Love, the Soft Cell song, yeah. Which is one of that and To Where Did Our Love Go. That, the bridge in between the two songs, is one of my favorite turns in music.
I put on yesterday Cruel Summer by Bananarama.
Beautiful.
Which is very apropos very for the cruel. Moment. It's summertime's fun and quirky.
Yeah.
You know, I Got My Mind Set on You by George Harrison.
Yeah. And wintertime's a little bit more, like, introspective, a little bit more like Elliott Smith type of stuff.
Yeah, a little bit more Interpol.
A lot more Interpol during the wintertime.
A little bit more national.
Yeah, a lot of national in the wintertime. So, you know, you sit here at the helm of this big institution, you're doing 10,000 people a week, you got a killer playlist. What's next? Like, what's on the horizon? Like, how do you keep... Now that I feel that you have people with you... You know, you've proven yourself. You're not the new guy anymore. Like, where do you want to push an institution like this to in the future?
You know, I was thinking about that the other day, and I was reflecting. Like, I don't... You know, You always want to impress people. You always want to keep cooking great food. But I don't want to be that guy that's pushing the envelope anymore. Like, I want to just cook, find great ingredients with great people, and push those items. I mean, if I find... You know, we just found this really awesome melon called a Pretty Melon, P-R-I-T-Y, from Weiser Farms. It's basically like a sweet and sour melon.
Interesting.
And we were doing it. I got this country ham from Tennessee.
Oh, yeah.
Which is like this two-year. It tastes like...
Shout him out. Who's the producer?
It's Hammery. Nice. Hammery. It tastes like Grand Reserva. Kind of has like a blue cheese funk on the outside of it. We did that with some ricotta and like a basil sauce. And, like, it sounds like, well, basic bitch, but it's, like, really good.
Yeah, but you're pulling you're taking your classic ham and melon pairing, and you're taking, you know, a legendary ham purveyor, an unknown melon, and then folding in those fresh herbs. It's a whole new take. It's sort of what you've been working
on. Yeah, it's a take, and you get it, and it speaks for itself.
Awesome.
I don't need to, like, throw four different sauces at the plate with a crumble and a powder and a this and a that. And it's just, like, just... And I think people appreciate that.
Yeah, I think if I never see a powder again, I'll be good.
You know?
Yeah.
It's just...
It's time, it's come and gone. Well, Chef, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Congratulations. Where can people follow you? Where can people listen to the playlist? I know they're up on Spotify.
I think it's Jamming with Jason.
Yeah.
It's Jamming with Jason on Spotify.
Jamming?
Jamming with Jason.
Jamming with Jason on Spotify. And if people want to visit Rose Cafe online or in person, where can they go?
Rose Cafe Venice?
Yeah.
RoseCafeVenice.com.
Beautiful. Well, thank you so much. Appreciate it.
I should know that.
And the Rose Venice Instagram.
And the Rose Venice Instagram.
The Rose Venice Instagram.
Which has a link to our Spotify.
Beautiful. Awesome. Well, thank you so much. We have another song from the archives and then a live performance here on Snacky Tunes on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Thank you.
This is not the saddest process.
This episode is presented by LMT, the hospitality industry's preferred source for tabletop and more. From their New York City headquarters, LMT provides expertise and uniquely curated product opportunities to restaurants and hotels nationwide. Whether it's china, glass, and silver, to small wares and equipment, LMT's approach to tasteful design and product knowledge is simply unmatched. Learn more at littlemtucker.com. This episode is also presented by Forever Cheese, a passion for great taste. Forever Cheese sources the highest quality and most unique cheeses and other products from Italy, Spain, Portugal, and Croatia, and imports them to the United States, the majority under the Medica brand. If it's Medica, it's got to be incredible. Learn more at forevercheese.com.
Hi, I'm Moxie Rosenbloom. My dad, Harry Rosenbloom, hosts Feast Your Ears on Heritage Radio Network. Right now, HRN is having a summer membership drive. Becoming a member is so easy, and you'll help support shows like my dad's. You can sign up for a one-time donation or become a monthly sustaining member by visiting heritageradionetwork.org/donate. Let's keep food radio on the airwaves this summer.
Hello and welcome back to Snacky Tunes. We are sitting in the lovely and legendary Danger Bird record studio in Silver Lake, and we are with one of Silver Lake's own hometown heroes, Billy Woma. Welcome to Snacky Tunes.
Thank you.
You are one of the few born and bred and still live in Silver Lake.
Well, actually, I am born and bred.
But you moved away because people like me moved here. It's fine. You can say it.
Yeah, it's funny. Me and my girl were just having that conversation, and I was like, well, you can't. She was saying that because of people like you. And I was like, well, you know, I think growing up in LA, I've seen it so much in all the neighborhoods.
Yeah.
I'm just like numb to it. It's like people want to be together. We're weird creatures, man. Like something happens in a place, people all want to be there. Like from a car accident on a freeway all the way to like this huge metropolis, people are just like gravitated towards like, you know, spectacles and other people. It's a thing.
Well, also, I mean, I did live in sort of the same sort of place in Brooklyn, but with LA,
where the same shit was happening.
Where the same shit was happening. Yeah. But like with LA, you know, you pick where you want to live, where you want to hang, because if not, then you're just in the car the whole time.
That's true. Yeah, man.
But I mean, what's it been like seeing growing up? Where's your family from originally?
Well, my dad's from Chicago, but he moved to the Bronx, and that's where my mom's from as well.
Oh, yeah. Bronx. What part of the Bronx?
I don't even know, man. All I know is like I got we're Italian and
Arthur Avenue, maybe?
That sounds familiar. Okay. You know, I used to go there more when I was a kid, but then my mom moved her parents out and they just lived with us, so we had less reason to go out there.
Arthur Avenue is the famous like Italian strip.
That sounds, I think
so. My grandparents from Italy?
Yeah, from Italy.
Big food family?
Yes. Yes.
Like Sunday gravy, supper, things like that.
Dude, every day, 6 o'clock. That's like, you know, we're big on family values, like multiple generations living in the same house. Like, you know, my grandfather taught me how to do this tight little mustache. Like,
it's a good mustache.
Thank
for those for those who obviously can't see it, it's worth a Google.
It's worth Google a Google. My mustache.
Your first band was actually All in the Family, right? Or the first, fourth big, Babes.
Yes. Yeah, I used to be in a band with my brother and sister called Babes. And it was just my dad had taught us how to kind of play and sing and do harmonies and all that, and I
wait, what was that like?
You know,
I've never, you right, know, right. It's like oh, my dad taught us how to play sports or like things like that, but like teaching your kids how to harmonize, because that's not a given that your kids can even harmonize,
right? Yeah, my sister is like, she's a sick singer. I'm okay, and my brother's not good, but so that's why we always like put him in the we give
that?
Him the easiest.
You hear that, bro? You hear that, bro?
He knows.
I'm on the record.
He knows, dude. He knows. Believe me, he fucking knows.
But standing next to your sister, you're like, she levels you up.
She's great. She's great. Yeah, so it's like, you know, especially with harmonies, it's kind of like, it's a team effort.
Oh, yeah. Do Dak can sing, though?
Yeah, he's really good. He's really good.
And grandparents and on his side?
Yeah, sing. All my grandparents sang. Like, it was a big, very musical family. Ooh. Very musical. Like, you know, like, okay, here's the thing. Like, we're like Italian immigrant vibes. So it's like we're not big on sports. We're big on family and music. Like, that's kind of. And food. Yeah, it's like, it's just like, it's like, it's like a stereotype, but real. Right. Italian people.
So I can only imagine the holidays at your house are awesome.
Yeah, they used to be, man. But everyone's like, you know, doing their own thing and working. You know how it is, man. To live in LA, it's expensive. You got to also, like, it's not as...
grind.
Yeah, plus all my grandparents are past now. So it's like, back then it was a thing, like, grandparents, aunt, my mom and dad, me and my brother and sister, always, like, then inviting over other family.
So your dad teaches you how to harmonize.
Yeah.
Obviously, you're younger, but as you get older, what made you want to start a band with your brother and sister? Because that is always not the recipe for less stress and success.
It definitely was not less stress at all, man. That shit is... Family bands are tough. They're really hard because, like,
You can't ever really walk away.
No.
Like, you can walk away from the band.
Yeah.
But you still got to see them at Sunday at 6
totally.
p.m.
Totally. And it's like, you know, there's a level of respect that people give each other, or just leeway that people give each other when you're not that fucking tight. You know, like, you'll just let people, you let shit slide, but you might not with other people. Now go on tour with those people 24/7 who don't let shit slide. It's tough.
And are pulling up stuff from, like, you're not even starting at zero. You're starting at, like, remember when you were 8 and you ripped off my Barbie's head? Or, like, you ate the last piece of cake on my birthday? Like, they're bringing up stuff. They're like, what, dude? I'm sorry. I sat in the front seat. Like, what do you want from me?
Yeah, man. I mean, we weren't really, like, bickery. We were more like, I don't know, dude. We're a weird family. What can I fucking say? My family is very strange. I'm sure everyone thinks their family's strange, but I don't know. I don't even know what to think at this point. I just try to gravitate away from whatever the bickering shit is, and I just want to be happy.
I hear you.
Because life is weird, man.
And short.
It's fucking short. It's really short.
What was it like writing with your brother and sister?
That's fun, man. That's just fun. Well, me and my sister, we used to write together. We got a publishing deal when, like, we were just kind of, before Babes even, we had a publishing deal, and we were writing for other people, and just we were in the studio 24/7, and it's like, that's just fun, man. Like, the only thing that really gives me pure joy with nothing like poisonous, nothing like insidious in it is music. For me personally, I don't know. Everything else is like comes with, you know, like stipulations. It comes with, like, you know, certain things that you're gonna get this, but it's gonna take this from you. Music is the only thing that just gives purely. I mean, not the business side. The business side is fucked up.
Yeah.
That's fucked up, and that's gonna kill you.
But when you're writing,
that's beautiful.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
That's the only time when I'm truly like, I feel good. I feel really good right now. Most of the time, I feel pretty bad. But, like, you know, I got some okay friends now. Nadelle, my girl, has helped me make friends, because I'm like a very
You're
a lone wolf.
Guy.
Yeah, I'm a sensitive person. And I like being alone, but now I have cool new people in my life, and that makes me happy.
Well, speaking of beautiful things and the cool people in your life,
yeah.
I know we got the band in house, and these are all cool looking people.
Yeah.
What song do you want to play for first?
Without You.
Without You? Anything behind it? You want to give a little intro?
It's just a song about when your person leaves you and you think all of these weird, it's just like the relation of when someone leaves you to what you think. It's just the thoughts in your head when you're just sitting there and you're like, wow, I'm alone now and I'm gonna have to have a new life. That's what that is.
All right, well, here we go. Billy Womo, Dangerbird Record Studios in Silver Lake on Snacky Tunes here on heritageradionetwork.org.
Oh,
That was awesome.
Yeah, it was good. Okay, I don't even know, man. I don't
know. No, it's
know.
Sweet.
I just be myself now. I don't even know what you to fucking do.
You have, the song has like a classic 50s doo-wop-y Burt Bacharach sort of vibe.
Yeah, man. Well, Bacharach's the shit, but I gotta give up to Hal David. That's my man. Hal David is so fucking dope. He comes up with those lyrics, dude. What the fuck?
I know. I mean, it's funny, when you really go back, this is obviously before you are born, but that type of like lyricism and songwriting, obviously there's some like 50s, 60s nonsense songs.
Yeah.
But there is some real holy crap, these are like wordsmiths. Next level stuff.
Poems, man. Poems set to music. That's what they should be like. You know, so I like a lot of modern music, but that's my one issue is I wish people would spend a little more time on the craft of the lyrics. Because I learned to write lyrics from a dude who's also, he was a big Silver Lake proponent, which Benji Hughes. I don't know if you know that guy's music. It's beautiful, man. He's probably, he's debatably the best living songwriter right today, but nobody really knows him, and I don't know why. Like, but he's crazy. Check his lyrics, man. All right. Sick. You're going to love it. You're going to love it. If that's the thing you dig.
Yeah, I love that stuff. I mean, I love all that old stuff. I love the clock stuff, the romanticism behind it, where it's like...
Me too.
Yeah,
me too.
It's great. So now that you... So Babes is done. You put out a couple albums.
Yeah.
And you're working on your solo stuff now.
Yeah.
I mean, what made you... other than maybe de-stressing a little bit... What put Babes to bed and made you want to pick up the guitar by yourself?
Well, I like kind of had... Okay, so two things. One... Babes, when I was in that band with my brother and sister, like we just kept going as long as people were like, we're interested, like here's some money, make a record. We were like, okay, we'll just keep doing it. And then, but the way that it went was we got a deal and then they wanted a certain sound. And I tried to, we worked with this one producer and it didn't really, then they were like, no, your demos are better. So I redid it. And then they were like, yeah, but it's gotta be like this thing. So I was like, okay, I know what they wanted. Basically they wanted what I do, but only the pop, only like the most poppy, like more up-tempo, more like.
So if you have a spectrum from like melancholy to like mid to pop,
exactly,
everything that's left to pop.
Exactly. See, yeah. They wanted, like one time they said, the president said that we sounded like the Velvet Underground meets the Ronettes, and then he was saying, but do more Ronettes, and that was the thing. And I was like, I know what he's saying. So we tried that, and that's hard to write. That's really hard. Like, try to fucking write those songs, man. They are difficult. And, you know,
you don't
I'm
have
good,
a
but.
Crazy man with a wall of sound behind you. You know what I mean?
Of course, man.
With like, possibly a gun as well.
Well, he definitely, yeah.
He definitely had a gun. Definitely had a wall of sound. Yeah, I mean, that's tough. You know, it's especially.
It gets boring, too.
As you were saying, if, you know, music to you is this pure happiness.
Yeah.
And someone's like,
exactly.
Someone's like,
see, you get it, man.
And I get it. Like, you can always be the artist you want to be, especially as you said with the business side of it. But if someone's saying, like, I can't even let you start at being an artist because we have this idea of who we think you should be.
Yeah, yeah. It's, that's like, and they did hold up our record for a while because of that. And
dicks.
Yeah, total dicks, man. Like, you know, I don't know. Like, it's tough to meet someone that works in the music business on the business side who is cool, man. They're all weird. I don't know. Like, Aaron's pretty cool.
Aaron's cool. He's shout really out Danger cool. Bird. Andy's cool.
He's a cool dude, and because he knows he's a musician. He makes music, so he knows what it takes.
Yeah,
but, like,
I mean,
most of them are they're fucked up. And
but it's
and,
just harder now because it's like every album there's no room for error.
Yeah, you're right.
There's no room for error. Yeah. And like, there's no R&D. There's no like, let's take a chance. It's like, even your chances can't really be, like your chance is like, okay, you're not Beyonce, so you're a chance.
Yeah, you know what I mean? And that's the way they look at it. And it's not a cool thing, man. Because I think of this, like how many like great songs are we missing out on because these people are like, we have zero chances, we cannot miss, so they just like they pass on really amazing songs, really amazing people for something that they think you want.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Gross, dude.
Yeah,
that's
it's
gross.
It's not even like
now.
It's not even like we think it's good. It's we'll think it's it will sell.
We think that this is we're pretty sure this is what you want, and we don't even fucking know. That's why. So now to circle back to what you were saying was the answer is I'm doing this now because I sat down and I just went, I don't fucking give a shit anymore.
So many great,
and I just
by the way,
want to,
so many great things have started with some version of that sentiment.
It felt good, dude. That's why I did it because I was like, I don't fucking care and I'm just going to do what makes me feel something because more and more I wake up every day and I feel less and less and that makes me really sad, dude. I don't know what that is, but like, so doing this has been pulling me the other way and it means a lot to me. So the fact that anybody, I was like, I don't care if one fucking person listens to it and they're like, that means something to me, I'll be okay. But it's been kind of the opposite that people are sort of slowly, you know, tuning in and going like, this is a vibe that I get down with. And I love that because like I played this show the other day with these young, this young Hispanic dude, Katsu Oso, who's so dope.
Oh, yeah.
He's so good, man. I love his shit. And I met all these young people when we just were having a good time and talking about like sensitive boy shit, sensitive boys, sensitive music, like, you know, not wanting like, you know, whatever. I'm not going to say like any bands, but like, you know, like we're not trying to like always turn up. We're turning down, man.
Yeah.
Turn down. Like I don't want to fucking hear that noise. Like I want someone to tell me something beautiful because I don't know what the other, what else is there really?
Yeah. Just some stuff. Well, speaking of beautiful stuff, we're going to hear, what's the next song you're going to play?
We're going to play Alone Together.
Okay. Well, here we go. Billy Womo, Alone Together, Danger Bird Record Studio, and Snacky Tunes on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
I've been real lonely, real lonely, yeah. I'm calling you up on the phone, hello, hello, hello,
hello,
to know if you're lonely like me. We don't wanna be together. Let's make a change together. Let's do it.
such a long time.
That's some beautiful stuff.
Thank you.
Now, I know that you mentioned you're playing with a young Hispanic band, and what I had heard is that, like, you're sort of getting into this, you know, East LA Hispanic community, which has a big love for guys like Morrissey and things like that, and your vibe of sensitive music is sort of tapping into that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I definitely, that's it. If I do get accepted by that community to any degree, I'm super happy because that's sort of like where I grew up.
By the way, those people's bullshit meters are dialed up to like 11. But you know what I mean? You know what I mean?
Yeah,
the door with that?
I think that makes sense to me. I mean, like, it's, you know, like, you can go to the whiskey or whatever, and that's just all bullshit. Like, it's just nothing. There's nothing.
Does anyone still go to the whiskey?
I don't know. Or the Roxy. I don't go over there anymore.
And
if
we just lost our potential sponsorship with the whiskey, I'm okay with that.
Oh, shit, my bad.
No, it's okay. They don't know us.
But yeah, like, I don't, you know, it's not. I think that any. They just like either good vibes, like good dance. It's also about fucking danceability too.
Oh, yeah.
Me, like, can you dance to it? Because I can't dance to an Imagine Dragons song. I don't even know how would you even do that?
But like, do you have people doing like slow dances to your song?
Not slow dances. They're not dancing to my shit as much. Like, I'm even slower than these guys. But that's why I was like,
there's some swang, some like swang.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. I mean, you could, you know, do you like grab your girl and like.
Do the thing where like she's in front of you and you hold her from behind a little sway.
See, you know. That's what I was. I didn't know how to describe that exactly. That's what I was thinking, but thank you for.
I went to a couple shows. You know, I got my. She's got her hands in the pockets of my cardigan.
Yeah, that's what I want. Yeah. See, that's what I'm trying to do. I don't want, like, I'm not trying to, like, you know, whatever, Slipknot people or whatever.
I mean,
like,
look, right time, right place for that.
Totally, man. Nothing wrong with that.
Nothing wrong.
I could dig that.
Nothing
wrong. Like, yeah.
So you are working on a run of EPs right now, right?
Yeah, I'm doing a...
You have two out?
I got two out now. I'm doing my third. It's called All Trash, No Love, and it's cool. I like it. It's going to be good. And I'm doing 10 four-song EPs. I just wanted to be this series, and like, I just, you know, keeping in line with just doing what I want. I like little pretty things. So I was thinking, like, I just want to look at the end. I want to see like 10 little covers. They all look the same.
Yeah.
My friend Jessica is making them. She does the artwork. Like, I show her what I want, and she does the artwork. And it's just going to be this really beautiful little thing. Like, when you listen to it, each album, each EP has its own little story that kind of it's all concepts,
right? So each little one's its own little one, and then all 10 together will be a larger arc.
Yeah, like it should be. It should have like some kind of.
It's arc, on the record now, man. You better do it.
No, I mean, like, that is more. That will end up being more abstract.
I'm kidding. I'm not putting that pressure on.
That's
you.
That's a lot. Yeah, no. I'm already. You know,
you know,
like,
the way that we really see you is this like big opus storyteller, and what we would. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, man. It's like, who the fuck am I, Bob Dylan? Like,
yeah. So the first one is Wasted.
Yeah, which is just like the story of a relationship. It's just like you get together, you dig each other, you know, then you break up, and then you kind of reflect on that shit in a terrible way. Like, it's just that whole...
Is there any sweet to your sour? Like, is there some happiness in there?
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that there has to be. Like,
sure.
You could be melancholy all
day. Yeah. No, there is.
Because sometimes that sadness... is extra super sad when you have a little, like, the hope of happiness.
Yeah.
That's like, oh,
of course. Yeah. No, you got to have that. Like, okay, so I got on my, I haven't decided yet. There's two songs that I'm vacillating on that might end up on the fourth one, but it might be on this All Trash, No Love. It kind of depends on where I go lyrically. But there's two songs that's called Right Here in My Arms, and there's another song called I already have all these songs written, but it's called Right Here in My Arms, and the other one is called, which is just about, like, you know, you feel sad, and it's like, that's okay, because I love you, and you come here, and in my arms is where you're going to find love. But then the other one that's nice is called I Want to Live in a World Where Dreams Come True.
Okay.
So, yeah, like, that's, like, more...
There's hope.
Yeah.
A lot of hope.
That's when I like Irving Berlin shit.
Oh, yeah. That is that, like, grandiose.
Yeah, just, like, straight up, very literal. Very literal, like...
And for your recording, is it just all you? Are you bringing in the band? Or
well, I bring in my people because, like, you know, David, for instance, he's the guitarist, and he's better than I'll ever be. I could practice for 10 years. I'll never be as good as him. So, like, I do write it all, and I know what I want, but...
And you're like, go shred this.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not going to fucking... Look, man, it's taken me a while, but I know who I am. I know what I'm good at, and I know what... I'm not, like, and this dude
That's the toughest part.
Yeah, totally, it is.
It's easy to be like, I'm not good at that.
Yeah.
And then the flip is the confidence to be like, I'm actually good at this other part.
Yeah, that's hard. That's hard for people.
That's harder.
People are, I'm an asshole too. Like, I will, like, I have to quell my ego and be like, you know, that's, you're not good at that. Like,
yeah.
But that's not easy to do. That's not easy for people to, we're fucking, it's like, that's survival, man. That's the universe pushing you to say that shit. We will die out if you don't say, I fucking do it. Like,
yeah. No, it's also tough. I mean, especially in making music or creating anything where you need other people.
Yeah.
Or you know, tree in the forest type of thing. But you need people to listen as well. And if you're just a dick the whole time, people are going to want to come around to be part of your band or listen to your music or, like, hang out with you and have a taco. Like, you gotta have it. But sometimes people like that, like, sensitive guy with the, you know, the...
Yeah.
Like, ooh. It's like we were talking about, hey, guy. Yeah.
Right. But guy? you gotta watch out. People get sick of that shit real fast.
What are you into? What are you into?
What are you into, man?
What are you into, man? I don't know. Well, listen, man, thank you so much for coming by.
Yeah,
I want to make sure we have enough time for one more song, but I want to make sure that people can find you online, everything. So where can people get the EPs?
I got my EPs are all on Spotify and whatever, all that stuff, and they're
spell
on
your,
iTunes.
Spell your name just because they can't see it all.
Cool. Yeah, Billy UOMO.
Okay.
Cuomo. And then, so I'm on the Spotify. I'm on the whatever Tidal, if you do that.
Tidal? And by the way, if Jay-Z. That just lost us our Tidal sponsorship, I don't care because no one's listening. Literally,
hey, that was on you, man.
Literally, I think the only reason why Tidal exists is so for that one day, you can listen to a Beyonce or Jay-Z album
before everyone
else. And even this time, they didn't even hold out as long. Like new album popped up on Spotify a lot faster.
Yeah, because I think they're losing, like, the streaming battle. But that's okay. Whatever, man.
Oh, wait. Before we go.
Yeah. Oh, shall we check my... If you want to get, like, the EP, though, like a physical, whatever, just Instagram me, because I don't really do it that much, but I write people back because it's, you know, it's funny.
It's nice.
Yeah.
But before I forget, the Babes Hotline.
Yeah.
Which you're supposed to call if you're sad or and... Horn.
Yeah.
Does the Babes Hotline still exist?
No, it's defunct now, but it was, you know, we were on the road and just, like, we thought it was fun.
That's a great way to have people, like, just any entertainment.
Yeah, and, you know, people call us and be like, we're driving to, like, Portland and we're almost there. Like, oh, we're waiting for you at the show, blah, blah,
that's
blah.
Nice.
Like, yeah, you know, some people call and be like creeps and that's funny too.
Yeah.
We record it all and listen back and it was hilarious.
But those type of calls get you through that last, like, hour and a half of driving.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally,
were people more sad or horny? Probably a little bit of both.
I mean, okay, the thing that happened the most was people would call up and say, is this the Babes Hotline? And then they go, we'd say, yeah. And then they would go, and they'd hang up.
Huh. Okay.
Because they just were like, you know, I think, like, people get nervous.
Well, I think also because it's like, did they really put a hotline?
Yeah, they just were checking.
Yeah, just checking.
But they're just, but people, you know, I think people, a lot of people are shy. It's just a fucking phone call, man.
Phone call.
It's just a phone call.
But there's
call.
No anonymity. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Come on.
Well, no, because their number pops up, right?
Oh, I don't know. I don't even look at that stuff anymore.
All right. Well, what's the last track that we got?
True Love.
Story behind this?
It's just the truth. It's just what I can't live in this world if I don't have true love.
Ain't that beautiful? Well, thank you, man. I appreciate it. Thank you to Danger Bird Records.
Thank you.
Thank you to everyone. We'll be back next week. And here we go. Billy Womo, Snacky Tunes, HeritageRadioNetwork.org. See you next time.
Listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.